podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard that made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of running shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Ari, the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at runandskirun.blogspot.com, where I write about my training in and around New York City, home of the 26-time World Series champion New York Yankees, the 2008 Super Bowl champion New York Giants, remember who they beat, Chris? Your 18-0 New England Patriots, and home of the ING New York City Marathon, the best marathon in the world. So wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
Fungus on. I mean, what could you have?
I don't know.
Fungus.
Exactly.
Welcome to episode 79 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. This is Chris, your host. And that was Ari. Ari, why are you poking me in the eye? You know, I get the part about the Yankees, and I get the part about the, what is that other team, the Giants, the New Jersey Giants. I get that part. But you're dissing my Boston Marathon. That just, I'm sorry. The second best marathon in the world is what you meant to say about the New York City Marathon, I guess. So don't be poking me in the eye. Got a great show for you today. I really like this interview with Tamara Schilling. I keep pronouncing her name wrong. I keep putting the accent on the wrong syllable in her name. So it's a great interview. I think it's timely. It's something I needed. I think it's something we need. It's very inspirational. I like it. I had a great workout this week down. I went down the track, my old track that I spent so much time on when I was training seriously, down at the middle school here in Littleton. Did some tempo, and it felt really good to be out there, so familiar, so good, that it reminded me of a story from my book. So I read the story in. It's called Aliens of the Track, and I'm going to stick that in here, and you can listen to that as well. I hope you get something out of it. We've got our Ragnar Relay team all sorted out. It's all people from Twitter. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I tweet a lot, as you know. And it's CYKT Russell at Twitter. Also at Facebook, it's CYKT Russell. My email is CYKTRussell@yahoo.com. Love to hear from you folks. Call my call-in number and leave some messages. We'll get you on the air. Recommendations of people you want me to talk to, that's cool too. Hope everybody's doing great. We got a great show for you. On with the show.
Nothing for you.
This is Chris down the lake getting accosted by deer flies. It's deer fly season now. And they come in and they do carrier landings on the back of your head and shoulders. Take a quick bite of blood and leave you with welts. Buddy's going for a swim down the pond. It's early now. It's 7:04, so the sun has not yet set. Volunteered for the marathon this weekend. So I get a question today from a guy. He said, you talk about cross-training when you're training for a marathon. You know, what do you do? And I said it before. I really liked it when I was transitioning from tries to a marathon, and I was worried about the mileage of getting injured. I swam 3 days a week because I had a club membership. I swam in the morning and just did 50 laps 3 times a week. And I found that was really good with the 3 days a week of running. I didn't get injured at all. It didn't, you know, give me the kind of conditioning that I get with running 5 days a week, but it was excellently complimentary. The problem I have with the bicycle, which is the simplest way of cross training, is they're not 100% complementary. They're using the same muscle sets, kind of. So, like, I'm running today, and I did a hard bike yesterday, and I feel like I'm running in cement, and I'm having to be very philosophical about my running right now, getting in 12 miles a week, and biking the rest of the time. But you know what? When I go in this ultra, I have the key advantage of being the fastest hike a biker, the guy pushing his bike. I can push my bike faster than all the rest of those bikers. So I get those legs. I think I'm ready. I'm in my taper now. What do you think, buddy? Nice night, huh? Finally got some summer here. It's beautiful. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Except for the bugs. But hey, I picked a tomato out of my garden yesterday. A couple of beans. As long as you can stay out there without the mosquitoes holding you to the ground and sucking all the blood out of you. But I deed it up before I went out tonight. When you're running with the deer flies can actually bite through your tech shirts. So it's the only good time to wear a cotton shirt running is when the deer flies are out. But I just sprayed myself up, figured that would do it. Here, he just dove in again. It's like a big pool for him, like a big play pool for him. So yeah, I mean, one of the things you can do is you can get one of those like P90X or just some calisthenic routine. I fall off those programs really fast as soon as it starts to get hard. What I found was the easiest thing for me to do was to just club, combine 20 push-ups, 20 sit-ups, 20 leg lifts, you know, and stretching with my running before and after. And it's always better to stretch after, so you exercise before, stretch after. Because whenever I get into these programs where it's, you know, like the 100 push-ups, I always give up. It's just too much. So, you know, you gotta give yourself a break sometimes if you just don't have the time, and I don't have the time. Don't have the willpower either. Oh, there's a mosquito. You bastard. Hope that wasn't the equine encephalitis mosquito. Come on, dog. Let's go. Come on. I'm getting eaten alive. Let's go for a good start.
And now for our featured interview.
Tamara Schilling.
Hi.
And we're back.
Yay.
How are you today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm awesome. I'm going crazy. I got a ton of stuff to do, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah. It keeps you organized when you're really busy.
It keeps you organized, keeps you focused.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be at loose ends. That's the something about the devil's handiwork or something, right?
Well, we won't go there, right?
Yeah. So you and I met actually on Twitter, because you're one of those people who tweets positive things. And I'm sort of drawn like a moth to the flame to positive people. I understand you're a runner as well, so we're talking to our runners here. Give us you're a motivational speaker. Give us the 100 words on who you are and what you do.
Sweet. Well, I'm Tamara Schilling, and I am an inspirational, motivational speaker, and I think it's all the crap in my life that caused me to become so inspirational. So I think if you go through enough junk, you either sink or swim, and I found out how to swim, and I really, really am passionate about helping others to, if that's what they wish to do, to achieve their dreams, to achieve whatever success is for them. And I'm also a mom, so I think that, too, has brought me some amazing and delicious challenges that have pushed me to my limits at times, that have expanded my boundaries to places that have caused me to achieve even greater success and reach for higher dreams. So I go out and talk to audiences from the platform, as well as I do work with a few individual clients doing coaching. But I don't take too many of those because I do travel quite a bit, and my primary focus is platform speaking.
Do you like to travel?
I love it.
Yep.
I love traveling, yes, because for me it's, you know, I'm a freedom-seeking person. I could wander the globe and be very happy exploring, and one thing is having a child keeps me grounded to one particular place every now and then. But for me, getting on an airplane and going somewhere and meeting new people is like a breath of fresh air. I just love it. I love what I do.
Yeah, you know what? I have a high, heavy travel job, too. And I always run into people who are whining about they have to do business travel and stuff. I love it. Like, every trip's an adventure, you know?
Fantastic. And I only have to worry about what I'm going to eat or if I'm going to eat. And I don't have to worry about meal planning or doing all those other things. So it's free.
Yeah, it's like a free pass.
Yeah, I love it.
Your message, you know, when I watch your video and I watch your, mm-hmm. your speech, your message is how to transform adversity. So not just deal with adversity, because, you know, a lot of time in our endurance events, we deal with adversity. We just sort of muddle through and put one foot in front of the other. But how mm-hmm. to transform adversity and use it as a jumping off point to a higher level, to more fulfillment, right?
Absolutely.
Am I appropriate in how I'm translating your message?
You're right on the money.
Okay, well, you know, this is, I thought this was really topical because right now I'm looking around, you know, I see a lot of people out of work. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of people who are still in work. They're working, you know, 80-hour weeks, and they're struggling to get their families involved in their lives, and they're struggling with to get their workouts in even, and struggling with everything, struggling to make mm-hmm. the bills, taking cuts in pay, that sort of thing. And I've been fighting against sort of a negativity, but there's some reality to that that says, okay, how can we talk about using adversity to transform to a higher level when we're so focused on paying the bills, right? I mean, how do you answer mm-hmm. that question?
For me, I answer it because of personal experience. You know, I think you've seen on my website that, you know, I am very well versed in going to the bottom, you know, hitting rock bottom. Hitting rock bottom financially, with a bankruptcy, with, you know, less than nothing. Hitting rock bottom emotionally through a failed marriage, and you know if anyone's been through a divorce, that's an emotional toll. Physically, I've also been at a rock bottom place with moving through illness. But I think through each one of those, I've come to appreciate how we can get trapped in a really myopic focus or an illusion. And it's almost like in running, you know, when you're in fear and you're running away from something, you can go really fast for a moment, and then, you know, it's like a sprinter, right? They can go fast for a while, but not like a long-distance runner. And I think when we get caught up in fear, it exhausts our resources, our supply, very quickly. And we're not getting into a rhythm. We're not moving and running toward a goal. We're running away from something. And so for me, when you focus on, say, the fear of, oh, gosh, how am I going to pay my mortgage? Or, oh, my gosh, am I going to get a job? Or how's my business going to do? Whether you're employed by someone or self-employed, you know, we all share the same sorts of worries at times and financial stress. And if we are focused on the financial stress, we're moving away from something. We're trying to sprint, and we can't last that long. Rather than moving toward what we want, and you know, when you're running long distances, it's a vision, it's an achievement at the end. It's moving toward something, not running away from something. And so for me, I have to focus on what it is that I want. What's at the finish line for me? What's the goal? What is my dream, rather than what am I afraid of? So instead of focusing on what I don't have or what I'm lacking or what I'm afraid of, I try to keep my vision and my focus on what I'm moving toward. And for me, that's been a very powerful shift. And Chris, I know that you've seen I've I've been preaching this for a really long time. I felt for me that I'm tested on whatever I speak about, right? And I feel like that keeps me in a very authentic place, and it keeps me in alignment with my own integrity. And yeah. I have been out on the speaking circuit for quite a while talking about just that. And, you know, I felt like my big test came not with bankruptcy, which I thought was the big test, right?
Yeah.
Moved through that. Then divorce, and I thought that was the big test. I thought that would do me in. And I moved through that through using these same principles of going toward what I want. And then my son was diagnosed with autism. You know, I knew something was up about 18 months, but he got his official diagnosis by the time he was 3. And then, of course, I thought he should be retested at 4. And so at 4, we went through the entire gamut of testing again here at JFK in Denver, Colorado, through Children's Hospital, and he got his official stamp yet again. And for me, that was the biggest test I could possibly imagine for all the things that I ever preached on the platform. And if anybody is a parent, they, you know, can completely understand how I think one of the greatest trials in life is if anything should happen to your child. And even if you're not a parent, you're an uncle, you're an aunt, you know, you know, kids, they're just, you just want nothing to happen or be, you know, wrong with your child or with a child that you know and love.
So I like the message of focusing on what you want and not sort of the mire that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes, you know, that a lot of motivational people will tell you to focus on what you want, because it's like, I'll give you a couple of metaphors that I've learned converting myself to mountain bike racing this summer. One is, if there's a big rock or a hole in the trail, the best way to be guaranteed to hit that rock or that hole is to focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're riding and you're going, don't hit it, don't hit it, don't hit it, don't hit it, you're guaranteed to go into it, right?
Right, exactly.
And the other thing they taught me was, when you're going down a hill, and, you know, you're screaming down a hill sort of out of control, you don't want to focus on where you are, because there's nothing you can do about that. You're already in it. You want to look down the trail and see what's coming, because that's what you can control. So again, it's all about focus, right? And I think the biggest thing that I learned was, there was stuff I couldn't do because I was afraid of failing more than I couldn't do it. I wasn't capable of doing it. So the fear of killing myself kept me from being able to perform at a level that I needed to perform at, right? So it was actually a hindrance. So there's some exact metaphors from what I've learned recently by trying to change over to a new sport.
I totally agree. I think it's hilarious that you mentioned that, because I had an experience in mountain biking probably about 7 years ago, downhill, single track, terrified, you know, trying to be good at something that I wasn't yet that skilled at. And it's that whole don't look where you don't want to go. And the single track moving downhill was really close to an edge on this mountain, and I saw that edge, and all I could think of was, what if, right? So what ends up happening is that what if happened, and I go over the side of this ledge and go bumping down into cactus and whatnot, and it was a very painful experience of really don't look where you don't want to go, exactly what you just said.
Right.
And,
so to bring that back around to how I framed the question, people that are up to their eyeballs and focused on the mortgage and they start asking the wrong questions, like, why can't I pay the bills, or why am I failing, and focusing on that, and it becomes a downward death spiral. As hard as it is, I think you have to get out of that and focus on, okay, what small thing can I focus on to take the next step?
Right. And I think the other trap that we all fall into is the what-if part. What if I can't pay my mortgage? What if my customers aren't calling? What if I get fired? What if I don't get this interview and get the job? I have seen how we can drive ourselves absolutely crazy with what if through the experience with Parker, my son, because he also has a diagnosis of obsessive compulsive dysfunction. So he has OCD, and it's pretty severe in him. And the what if in the mind that we have gets out of control in OCD. And what if rules him. And he has taught me how crazy my mind is, because he's living it out loud. And I realize he's only doing on the outside what I do on the inside but don't tell anybody. It's the what if, what if, what if. And I think the thing that we can do is we can catch ourselves doing the what if I can't pay the mortgage, what if we don't have enough money, what if, and stop it, realize we're doing it, and think about one thing that we want to move toward. What's one thing that we want? And focus on that instead. Focus on having enough money to pay the mortgage. Don't think about not having enough money. Focus on winning the interview. Focus on having the clients call rather than worrying about what if they don't. And I think the first thing we do is we stop ourselves and realize we're caught up in a crazy thought process. And if we can stop. And for me, my thing is to stop and then breathe, because I think, Chris, we forget to breathe. And what happens is when we're constantly in stress, we're taking short chest breaths, and we're sucking in and holding, and we're not actually fully taking a breath and doing that diaphragmatic breathing that's so key to feeling positive and alive and energized. So stop and breathe is the first thing I suggest.
Yep, that's good. So switching gears a little bit, how do you think, the physical body and personal health fit into leading a fulfilling life, right?
It's key. It's key because it affects everything. If we're not healthy, first of all, we don't have the energy or the reserves or the resilience to really take on daily life, right? Because we don't feel well. And any of us who are in relatively good physical health, you know what it's like when we're sick, right? When you get knocked down with a cold or a flu, do you really feel like taking on the challenges of just everyday living?
I never get sick anymore because I decided not to.
Right on. Well, I didn't get sick anymore until my son went to kindergarten and then picked up every bug there was in the school and brought it home. They're like little germ-infested people, and you know, around the ages of 3 to 5. But I find that in order for us to feel completely energized and alive and be able to really vision and dream and achieve is to feel good in the body. This is the vehicle we have to really traverse what the world, and it's got to be in good shape. It's got to be able to be resilient and alive and vibrant. And you know as well as I do that you can feel pretty down low, you can feel pretty crappy, and get yourself out on a run or get yourself to the gym or get yourself on your bike, breathe some fresh air and move, and don't you feel totally transformed afterwards?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, when we get into those dark places where we begin to get depressed by our life circumstances, why is it that when we move into that place, the last thing we do is go exercise?
Yeah, and we give up on that first. That's one of the first things we throw out of the boat.
It's horrible because actually that actually potentiates more depression. It potentiates more worry, and it really is draining. Have you ever been around a really negative person who's just whining or complaining? And do you feel zapped of your energy? Do you just want to...
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think negative thinking, negative energy is sticky. It's really sticky and gooey, and it serves nothing except to drag us down. And I say if you really want to achieve or move forward, is first of all, avoid being around people who aren't going to support, you know, a positive attitude, because you don't need to fight that too, right?
Yep.
And if
absolutely.
You're the negative, you know, if you're the negative thinker, then switch it, because what are you doing to the people around you, you know?
Right. And I love that visual of it being just a black sticky goo that sort of holds you down. I love that visual. One of the things I noticed on your stuff is that you talk a lot about your son and his autism and what it's meant to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it really impressed me because I've spoken with a lot of people in our community, you know, in the running community and in other communities who've had direct experience with autism in their lives. And mm-hmm. I've noticed that it sort of starts as an overwhelming challenge, sort of a why did this happen to me moment, but then it actually transforms them and they become better, stronger people because of that challenge in their lives. And I hear it over and over again, right? And it's not just autism, but it's things like cancer or, you know, whatever it is. It's some personal overwhelming challenge that leads people. And I was just reading Lance Armstrong's first book, and in that he says, you know, if he had to choose between battling cancer and winning the Tour de France, he says he'd choose cancer because for that was a much more self-defining moment,
mm-hmm.
right? So my question to you is really twofold, which is, you know, what's that process to get through a challenge like that and out the other side? How do you do that? How do you manage that? And secondly, you know, what about us run-of-the-mill folks who are fortunate enough not to have those challenges? How do we create challenges or create anchors to achieve that same self-fulfillment?
Well, I think that, first of all, those are power-packed questions. Those are great, Chris. I think at the beginning of any great challenge, like what Lance went through with his cancer or what other parents such as myself have gone through with, whether it's autism or it's, you know, manic depression or it's some sort of challenge, cancer, children, you know, I'm an RN too, and I used to do work with children who have cancer. So whatever the challenge is, it's about, first of all, moving through stages. There's stages of grief, and there's stages of grief with loss, whether it's a divorce or a lost relationship or the death of a pet, whatever the challenge is, there's these stages. And I think that, first of all, if we can acknowledge that we're, you know, grieving or we're depressed or we're worried, just to not judge that and not get down on ourselves, because that does not serve. And I think first acknowledging that it's okay to have feelings, and second, do that stop and breathe that I talked about. Instead of getting trapped in the feeling and getting trapped in the worry and getting trapped in the what if, is to just stop and breathe and then refocus like a laser beam on what it is that you want. And for Lance, you know, he knew what he wanted, didn't he? He was quite clear in that. And I think the problem is that a lot of us are very foggy. We know exactly what we don't want, but we don't have any clue what we really want. And right. I think extreme adversity puts you into a pressure cooker to really figure out what's important to you. And by nature of the pressure cooker, you realign your priorities pretty darn quickly. And what happens is whether you're in a pressure cooker or not, getting those priorities into alignment and really thinking about what really matters. You know, is it your health? You know, which, you know, it does boil down to that, right? And getting...
It's a moment of clarity.
Yeah. And you need that clarity to then define that vision for yourself of what you are going to move toward and stop looking at what you're moving away from.
So these great challenges that people get actually become that catalyst to that moment of clarity.
Absolutely. It forces you to. Because all of a sudden you're like, wow, you know, I took all these other things for granted, but now I realize this is what really matters. Like, now I realize that living and breathing really matters to me. Now I realize that it doesn't matter that my child gets into this school or that school or makes it into college. Ooh, I could care less. You know, for me, you know, it was ridiculous, these visions that I had of parenting and a child before I became a parent. And then I had all kinds of ideas about what I wanted this child to be, right, which were expectations and attachments, which I learned, you know, really didn't serve him or myself. And when it came down to getting this diagnosis, boy, did I have to just completely let go and go, wow, you know what? All I really want is for my child to be happy, to be able to give love and receive it. That's all I wanted.
Yep.
Can he give love and receive it?
And by simplifying that, you made everyone successful. So we're coming to the end of our rope here, Tamara. And this has been really great. I hope this isn't too heavy for everyone, but I think it's something we all need. What is your website, and do you have any programs or anything that you want to tell people about?
Well, I'm doing some really exciting stuff. My website is my name, so it's www.tamaraschilling, and that's TamaraSchilling.com. And I am going to be heading out on kind of a cross-the-country road trip here in about 2 weeks, hitting a bunch of cities. And if you hit my website, I'm going to be listing all the cities that I'll be going with. And, you know, I'm going with my other miracle, my relationship miracle, which is Joseph Ramseth. You can definitely follow that on our trip. We're going to be hitting each city and doing some really great speaking engagements and meetups, tweet-ups through Twitter and Facebook. And I'm also doing the U.S. Small Business Conference that's going to go on in St. Louis the weekend of September 11th. And that's really cool, Chris, because that's going to incorporate some of the most powerful connector networkers that are in the U.S. today. So that's a really powerful weekend. Check out the website because I will have a huge calendar coming out. And Chris Parker is writing a book.
Oh, no kidding.
He is writing a book. The kid they said would never talk is writing a book, and this is a miracle. He's writing it on how you know when people are in love. And you know autism, they said autistic people don't really get those innuendos. Well, guess what? He's 9 and he's writing a book on it, so there. It's fantastic. And he is a living, breathing miracle that defied all science and medicine known today. And so that's exciting. And I'm going to help him publish and promote that book probably September.
All right. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, and it's cool coming from a 9-year-old. I love the way they see love. Oh, it's just exciting and vibrant. And it's not tainted or jaded. It's awesome.
I'm going to have to let you go. I really appreciate you giving us some of your time today, and I think you've added a lot of value here, and I look forward to staying in touch with you. Maybe I'll come out and visit you on your Winnebago tour.
Well, I would love to, and it's been a blast, and thank you so much, Chris, and I just really respect you, and I love runners because we're a kindred spirit, us runners, and I think there's nothing that we can't achieve.
Absolutely. Thank you. We'll see you later.
Thank you, Chris. Okay.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Aliens at the Track. Introduction. The delineation between recreational running and training is the track workout. It's a love-hate relationship. There's nothing I fear as much as a hard track workout. It causes my body great distress to run fast. I mean, fast for me, that is. The bottom line is it hurts. But on the other hand, if you want to race well, you have to spend some days suffering at the altar of speed, huffing and puffing around a 400-meter oval. There's nothing that will give you a I-just-had-a-great-workout sense of satisfaction like a good showing at the track. Eventually, it becomes part of your life, and you cherish it like you cherish all hard-fought battles. Subheading, what's with all this speed work anyhow? Often, I end up at the track after hours. I work too much, have an active family, and all those other blessings that push and pull on a runner's time. Sometimes the best hour to get a good workout in is late at night, after dark. Many times I'll get home late from the airport, or the chaos of the day will simply crowd out all extracurricular activity until the sun is down. I've had some great workouts all by my lonesome on the track in the cool moonlight with the fireflies and the bats to keep me company. If you're a mid-packer like me, the people who share your universe are often befuddled by your running necessities. This running thing is okay in theory, as long as it doesn't interfere with other familial duties and keeps within the domain of normal business hours. My wife will look at me, putting on my running gear, from the bed where she is preparing to be numbed to sleep by TV and say, "You're not going running now." It's not a question. She knows I'm going running. It's an expression of disbelief bordering on disgust and tinged with resignation. What she means, if you could see the comic thought bubble over her head, is, "You are an idiot. What did I do to deserve this?" In polite society, one evidently does not go to the track after dark. Evidently, that is beyond the bounds of decorum and pushes the boundary of sanity. It's okay. After being married for nigh on 20 years, her opinions are more reaction to habit than an accusation. Like a doctor's mallet to the knee, she feels compelled to remind me how intrusive and farcical this running thing is. I can deal with the people at work. I don't mind the clients who look at me like I've got a screw loose when I turn down dinner with them to go for a run. They treat me as if I'm a diabetic who needs to slip behind the curtain for a discreet syringe of insulin. Well, how long do you need? Well, a lifetime would be nice. Any questions? It's the kids that really hurt. You know, looking up at you from bed with those eyes, they go right for the heart. "Daddy, all you do is work and run. You're never here." And so it goes. We are all mid-pack martyrs for our sports. But the siren calls, and I'm off. Sometimes I'll run to the track, and sometimes I'll drive. It depends on the workout I have scheduled and how much energy I have left at the end of the day. In New England, we usually can only run on the outside track when the weather accommodates. I don't care about the temperature, but snow and ice make the corners a little tricky. And yes, I have tried to do speed work in a snowstorm. Usually, at night, the track is deserted. There may be an occasional walker, but they disappear not long after dusk, leaving me to charge in circles, or rather ovals, in the gathering gloom. It's not so bad at the track at night. I'm a night guy anyhow. I like it when it's cool and quiet. I like it when my body is awake from the day's effort. I like the way the stress can be turned into energy and effort. At night, the night bugs are out. Frogs are peeping and grunting from the low areas. Bats flit across the open infield chasing lightning bugs that flash a Morse code mating dance. My track has birds that live in the infield. They're called killdeer because of their call. "Killdeer! Killdeer!" as they run around on the soccer pitch, agitated by my presence at dusk. My track, I call it my track because of the thousands of laps I've run there over the years. It gives me a sense of proprietary. My track is old. It is an old asphalt trap, from whenever they built the school, maybe in the 50s or 60s, and it's not in bad shape considering its age. It's a fast track, or a lively track, as they say in the parlance of tracks. I know where all the cracks and holes and lumps are. They tried to screw me up a couple years ago by applying asphalt patching to the holes. Overnight, they turned my familiar holes into lumps, and it changed the whole experience for me, but I adjusted. When it rains, I know where the puddles will form, and I know the shallow water paths, like an old mariner plying among the shoals. I know where to drift outside or inside to find the smoother lanes of travel. I know every inch of my track. I can close my eyes and clearly catalog the topographical anomalies one by one along the whole 400 meters. And I know which way the wind blows at each time of year. I know my target splits for 200, 400, 800, etc. And sometimes I bring a piece of chalk to keep track of my workouts by scribbling progress on the asphalt like a child at play. I've run on tracks all across the country while traveling, but returning to my track gives me a sense of being home. It's just right. It fits. It's comforting. Sometimes I have to share my track with others from town. Once I had a soccer mom ask me, "Why can't you run somewhere else?" Meaning, "Why are you bothering us when we're trying to watch soccer practice?" And like, it's a track? One time, when I was there for an early lunch, they let the little kids out to run, because it's right next to a school. It was so much fun. They would try to race me for 100 meters or so every time I came around, and it was cool. It really gave me a boost. And one night, running late, the town decided to spray for mosquitoes. And there I was, trying to run, when a tanker truck pulls around the track spewing malathion gas. I had to quit early that night. My track is situated behind, or rather beside, a middle school, and it has poor illumination from this one street light over by the school. 90% of the track lies in darkness. There are woods and athletic fields on two other sides, and on the final side, behind a row of medium-sized white pine trees, there is the highway. And I'm treated to three lanes in both directions with lots of trucks at night roaring by with intrusive Doppler shifts of noise. Most nights it's just me. It's cool, it's peaceful, it's beautiful, but it really hurts. Let us get right to the heart of the matter. With the myriad of peaceful trails and lanes at our disposal, why do we journey to these lonely strips of asphalt and beat ourselves miserable? Some people would say, "You're a marathon runner, not a sprinter. What are you doing at the track?" That's a great question, because it's a question I ask myself every time I'm there. What's with all this track nonsense? It's boring to run around in circles, right? And it hurts, too. I dread my track workouts like electric shock therapy. Then why do we do it? We do it because it represents a universal truth. If you want to get better, you have to spend some time in your discomfort zone. That's what the track is for us, a pure and simple litmus test of speed and condition. You can lie to yourself on long runs, but when it's 800 meters and you're wearing a watch, there's no fudging the answers. You can or you cannot run four laps in X minutes. Bottom line, black and white, one or zero, and most of the time the truth hurts. It is also this truth that will set you free. The track will show you the way to strength, power, and confidence that you will find in no other place. That's why we go. And humiliation led me to the track. Humbled as I was by that old nemesis, Boston, it kicked my butt and left me weak and tortured, and it made me mad. And I knew I could run the distance, but I had to take 40 minutes off my time to qualify. I went to the internet and found a workout plan by some veterans. It consisted of track workouts twice a week. Tuesday speed, Thursday tempo. That's it. That's the secret. That's the key. Combined with a good base and solid long runs, the track has enabled me to qualify for Boston every time I've tried. It stinks. It hurts. It's hard to make yourself do twice a week. But if you can do it, the benefits are amazing. Beside the fact that you'll cut many minutes off your marathon time, track work will make all your distances faster and all your runs easier. At the track, you will learn about yourself. You will learn pace. After a few weeks, you will be able to accurately judge your pace by effort level and not even have to look at your watch. Repetitive speed work will give you a mechanically smooth and energy-conservative stride. It will give you a quiver full of strides and paces from which you can pull when you need them with confidence. The track will teach you about your body and its limits. It will make you aware of and let you manipulate your physical thresholds. It will give you the confidence to look discomfort in the eye and say, I know what's on the other side, and run through it. That gives you the power at the end of a long race to say, only 1 mile left, I know I can run a mile. Like your long runs, at some point, maybe weeks or months from now, it'll start to seem easy, and you'll say to yourself, what was the big deal? Enjoy it while you can, because the track is a fickle mistress. This type of conditioning will dissipate 10 times faster than it took you to accumulate. It's a hard peak to stay on top of, and there is work on every slope. It's worth the effort, even if you only do it once, to see what you're capable of, and to discover things in yourself that you did not know were there. My advice to you is to find your track, or find a track, and make it your own. Suffer through a 12-week program of twice-a-week speed and tempo. By the third week, you will start to see changes that will amaze you if you have never done it before. And when the snow melts in the spring, and I make my way down to my track for that first real workout, it's like seeing an old friend that I haven't seen for a while. And I'm glad to see that old friend, and reminisce over good times had. But then that old friend tells me how slow I've gotten, and we get to it. Find your track.
I'm out there, Jerry, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Okay, that's it. Hope you like the show. Looks like we're giving you a few bonus minutes over our 40-minute allotment here, but remember, I never force you to listen to those one-hour-plus podcasts, because that's just bad form, just lazy editing. Should be an easy week for me. I'm in my taper. Couple of easy rides, fix up my bike. I did manage to buy a few shekels worth of parts to replace, but what the heck? Next weekend is the race. I'll be leaving Friday with Dan and Tom in a cargo van to drive down. We're camping out Friday night, doing the race all day Saturday, driving back Sunday. So I have to figure out all my logistics this week, like gather up my clothes, my food, my drop bags, all that fun stuff. I'm actually not quite sure how I'm going to squeeze in an episode next week. Maybe I'll just record over the weekend, put it together on the fly. I am being smart enough to take Friday and Monday off, though. Then, I have to start running again to get ready for the Ragnar Relay. And we got sponsored by Brooks Running. So, we're going to have some new shoes and duds to test out, and it's going to be a blast. Hope everyone has a great week. Don't forget to reach out to me if you need a shout-out or anything. Enjoy your summer. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your life. And focus on what you want. And I hope to see you in the great out there. Our music tonight is a nice alternative piece by an artist from the PodSafe Music Network called Firewater. And the song is called Three-Legged Dog. And I like the sentiment. And I know you're getting the sick of the blues. So, ciao.
Well, some people think I'm damaged, 'cause I'm always on my own. But just because the lights are out don't mean you're not at home. And they say when you're psychotic, let you never walk alone. I'm just a three-legged dog on the roam. And everybody thinks that I'm unfriendly just because I can't recall their names. But all the faces and the places just begin to look the same. You haven't got the kind of time it takes to play those kind of games when you're a three-legged dog on the roam. No, I may not be good looking, but I'm a killer in the dark. And girl, you know my bite is so much better than my bark. So if you need a friend tonight, why don't you come find me in the park? I'm a three-legged dog on the roam. Father thinks I'm lazy 'cause I ain't got no career. And my mother thinks I'm crazy, and my sister thinks I'm queer. Ah, but if you think it's easy, man, you just got no idea. I'm a three-legged dog on the roam. Yeah, I've been down so long that coming up is giving me the bends. And I'm so goddamn lonesome I count enemies as friends. And every day I chase my
a good boy, they'll throw me a piece of meat. I'm just a three-legged dog on the road.
Haberlere bakacak olursak, depresif bir adam kendini gitar teliyle astı. Polis raporuna göre geriye bırakılan notta, "Üzgünüm ama bunların artık hiçbiri komik değil." yazıyor.
We would like to thank you to come here and to visit our radio.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.